Welcome to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast, where women with ADHD finally feel seen, understood, and unapologetically themselves. If you have ever felt like you're too much and not enough all at the same time, you're in the right place because that's the alchemy, learning how both come together to make something priceless. I'm Jessica Covington, holistic ADHD coach and fellow fancy brain, and I'm really glad you're here. Let's get into it. Welcome to ADHD Alchemy. It's more than a podcast. It's also my signature coaching program at Fitology. It's perfect for bright, sensitive women who are tired of feeling scattered and chaotic and ready to feel calm, clear, and finally in control. Inside the program, group or private, we quiet the relentless inner critic, break old patterns of procrastination and self-sabotage, and start redefining ADHD on your own terms. So in just a few weeks, you'll find yourself grounded, confident, and leading your life with intention by learning to work with your fancy brain instead of against it. If that speaks to you, please find more at fitology.com. That link, of course, will be in the show notes. And today we have with us Jordan Barker, a mom of two living in Seattle, Washington, balancing a life with a two-year-old and a five-month-old while building a high-impact career in tech. She spent over 8 years at Microsoft, starting as a support engineer, helping enterprise customers with code development, before moving into program management in Windows. She became one of the youngest managers at Microsoft and the youngest in her 1,200-person organization, where she helped lead a multi-billion dollar initiative. Today, she works in Azure as a fast-paced in engineering environment, managing releases for large-scale products. While currently wrapping up maternity leave, she's beginning a new chapter in coaching. Driven by a desire to give back, she's passionate about helping others grow, navigate ambitious career paths, and learn from the challenges she faced along the way. Although new to coaching, she brings real-world experience, honesty, and heart to supporting others' journeys. Jordan, I am so glad you're here today. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you for having me.
You know, a lot of my guests are new to their ADHD diagnosis in midlife, but that's not true for you. You've known since early elementary school that you have a differently wired mind, and you also recognize that adult ADHD takes a fairly different shape. Can you talk about how your thinking style has changed and grown over time?
Yeah, absolutely. I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was 6 or 7 years old, very, very young. And what it was framed to me was very, you can't pay attention. And I struggled a lot with that diagnosis because, you know, it would be coined, you know, behavioral issues. If I would get finished with work fast, then I would be disruptive. Whereas other kids also, you know, were finishing with work fast, wouldn't be. So that's kind of where we differentiated. And I always was seeing it through this lens of a deficiency. Mm-hmm. But now in my adulthood, it has starkly changed my view of it. I see myself as being ADHD as almost a superpower, to be transparent. I think I can get to conclusions quickly. I can see paths quickly. I can connect dots in a very fast manner. And that's not the challenge for me anymore. I see that as a huge strength. But if I get somewhere, if I get to the conclusion, or if I get to the solution by myself, that doesn't serve anyone. It doesn't benefit anyone. So my challenge is, how do I bring people along so that they're there at the end with me? And that's what I have to work on, because I understand this aspect of ADHD and what it does for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a great way to put it too, that you may get to the finish line first, but what good is it if you're there all by yourself?
Right.
You have to bring the team along. What are some of the specific challenges of ADHD as an adult for you?
I would say I rely on systems, and not because I think something is wrong with me. I know how I think. I know how I thrive. Systems help me thrive in my personal life, in my coaching business, in my work life. Systems help me thrive. So the challenge for me is when those systems break, and I don't necessarily recoil and give up. And I don't think that that's a tendency of many adults with ADHD. I think that there might be some spiraling, but what I try to do is go back to the basic structure that will help me rebuild. And that's more or less how I rebound. But I need systems. I can't imagine my life, any aspect of it, with my kids, with my work, with anything that doesn't rely on a system.
Systems, it seems to me that's a word that gets thrown around a lot, and sometimes people have different understandings of it. So, could you give us a couple of real life examples for yourself of the systems, or not in any detail necessarily that you don't want to divulge, but an example or two of a system that really works for you at work and one at home?
Sure. I think a basic system that people are very familiar with is a calendar. And calendars are only as good as you follow through with them. Because you can have all of these events on your calendar, but if you have this block of time and you say, yeah, I blocked off this time for thinking, but I didn't get my project done, so I really need to use that time for that, then you're not actually using the system. And so there's a lot of discipline required, which I think is difficult for people with ADHD because you want to check off the task. You want to get it done. And maybe you didn't time box it in the way that you should have. And so a system for me is abiding by my calendar that I set up, that past Jordan has set up for future Jordan's success. And so I have to trust. Past Jordan knew what she was talking about and what she was thinking. And sometimes she's wrong. And that's okay. I give her grace. And I just try to be better next time when I set up my calendar. And so that's one system I rely on heavily. I'm also someone that is low communication with different aspects of my life. My childcare, I use an au pair. And then for these everyday tasks that everyone has to do, every household has to have done, laundry, cleaning the kitchen with my two young kids. They love produce, they love berries. And so it's cutting up berries. And so what I do is I've enlisted a household assistant to do that. And so one of the systems that I've created for her is we use a skylight. And skylight is just you can you've got a calendar, but it's also task. And the task part is what I rely on. And so a system, very granular for me, is that if I put something new on the task list, it goes in all caps. And then the next day I'll lower it. But I put it in all caps because you have this slate of text. And if it's in all caps, it's different. So your eyes will catch it. And so I use this example just to say that when I say system, I use a structure in some way in every aspect of my life, even as granular as that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You have almost a subsystem within a system.
Right.
Yeah. What do you, just a curiosity question here, what do you think makes systems so important for us to rely on? What do we get out of using a system that does something for us?
Yeah. I think a couple of things. It takes the predictability and makes it real. So it's something that makes it reliable because you know it already exists. I think something that's very important for me is it separates thought from execution. Therefore, on Saturdays, I don't have to think every Saturday what goes, I'm a nursing mom, what goes in my pump bag. Okay, what goes in my sons, my 6-month-old, what goes in his swim bag? He does swim on Saturdays. What goes in my daughter's ballet bag? Well, she does gymnastics after. So what goes in that bag? And that's when she eats lunch. So what are we going to pack for lunch? So what a system does is it separates that thought from execution. So if I create a checklist for this is what I need on Saturdays, then every Saturday after that, I'm no longer thinking. I just get to execute. And a lot of times, executing is the easier thing.
Yeah. And the more dopamine laden thing, maybe
Check,
that is what
check,
makes it easier.
check.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. It really having a something like a checklist or another system reduces the cognitive load of future tasks. I think also it may contribute a little bit of central nervous system safety, a predictable, at least mostly predictable, way to envision the future that makes us feel somehow safer.
Totally. That sense of relief of that's okay, tomorrow's going to come, but I'm already prepared for it.
Yeah. Let's shift a little bit into talking about the shower of shame that can rain down on us for being so dependent on our systems. Because if you're anything like me, when we have a system that then breaks down, it gets really easy to fall into thinking, well, I shouldn't need such rigid systems. I shouldn't rely on, somebody else or a timer or this or that to get things done. We can fall into thinking, what's wrong with me? And why can't I just be like everyone else and do these repetitive things out of rote memory? Have you experienced anything like that? And if so, how did you navigate it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a system will break. Routines get disrupted, especially if you're a mom. Kids get older developmentally. Life changes. Capacity drops for one reason or the other. So your system will break. I think it's important to have backups and know what you're going to do. And I only say that through experience. Prior to that, if a system broke for me, it was catastrophic. And I almost took it personally. Why is this happening to me? And it's detrimental because you certainly can't create a system in that mindset, certainly not a new one. And it's just, it doesn't serve you to do that and to be that way. And so I think creating those backups, if this happens, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back to the basics. I'm going to rebuild from the smallest possible version. And instead of trying to become this perfect robot, it doesn't mean I'm failing. It means I need to try again. I need a new revision. But it is so easy to feel that shame and that if one thing happens, everything's falling apart. I empathize with that wholeheartedly because I've felt it. Sometimes I still feel bits and pieces of it until, you get your second thought back in. I say this, like you can't control your first thought. That's your impulse. But you can control your second one. What are you, okay, that happened. Well, what are you going to do about it? And that's your second thought that comes in. And I think it's so important to work on your second thought that comes.
Yeah, that's brilliant. What do you say to the person who is listening to this right now and thinking, systems, I got to create a system. I got to create a checklist for this thing. That's too many steps. I'm going to wing it. What's your advice to that person?
It seems easier at first, and it does require, what I call activation energy. You have to start from nothing, and starting from nothing is really hard. But I think that editing is so much easier than creating. If you have to write a document, for example, is a very basic example, then if you just write it, I think reading it and iterating on it is so much easier than writing it. And it's more important that you just get it out and you know this one's gonna be garbage, but I'm gonna edit it, I'm gonna iterate on it, and then it will get better. And so I think it's having that discipline of, okay, I'm just gonna create this structure and it's going to be bad, but I'm going to learn what works and what doesn't work, and then I'm going to change my system to reflect that. It is hard getting started, and I wish I had magic words to say, oh no, it's easy. Here's why it's easy. But it's not. It's having that discipline of, okay, if I just get this out, I can change it. Nothing is blocking me in from the system's permanent. It's not.
Right. Yeah. That's great advice that it's all changeable down the line as you learn and grow and try new things and experiment. Just edit.
Right, just
Yeah.
edit.
You know, it's so fascinating to talk with you because your story really helps showcase what a dynamic difference ADHD can be. A lot of times it makes people feel really chaotic and reactionary in their own minds. And you've developed this way of being that really runs counter to that. So I wonder how much overlap there is for you between ADHD and your career path being, if I understand it even a little bit, being so heavily devoted to logical and linear thinking. What do you think might be the overlap there?
I think there's a lot of overlap. I think that it's getting somewhere quickly. Like, complex scenarios are not difficult for me to understand and get to, okay, this is how we're going to navigate through this and get to a solution, and this is how it's going to be implemented. That's, not what's hard. What's hard is convincing people that this is the right path, and
Yeah.
then being open also to other people's perspectives. But my career trajectory, I think, has largely been impacted by me being ADHD and thinking quickly and reaching those solutions fast. And it's forced me to build the skill in a rapid way of bringing others along because I've been burned. It's certainly not something I learned overnight. I've been burned by reaching a solution too quickly, saying, okay, why don't you guys get it? Let's just do this. And nobody's in it, right? Even if they do it, they don't really because they don't believe in it. You haven't convinced them. So even if you win in a way, quotes, you don't really win because they're not going to do it. And so again, it's a detriment to you and your idea that is never going to be fulfilled. So you're forced, and I was forced to go to a plan B, even though I knew my plan A was great, but I didn't bring enough people, I didn't convince the right people. Then now I had to go with an inferior plan because they didn't come with me. And that's on me. You have to do that.
Yeah. In your coaching work you do now, do you have a lean toward clients who are very similar to you, or very different, or somewhere in between?
This is a great question. I would say that I have a tendency to lean towards people that are similar to me. These are people that I consider, and more importantly, they consider that they're high-performing individuals, and their goal is to lead their life rather than reacting to it. We have such full lives that it is so easy. It's easier to react to it in the moment, but long term, it is much harder because then things are just happening to you. You have no control, you don't get to determine the destination, and you eventually feel powerless. And that happened to me. And I want to help people not feel that way, that feel like you're a high performer And you can still lead this life in every aspect. And those are the people I gravitate towards, is certainly people that are like me. And I think that I have a lot of empathy for them.
Yeah, I'm sure that comes across to them as well. I
I
think
hope
one of the
so.
most important things we can bring to our roles as coaches is our lived experience. And so I can just hear in what you've said already that your lived experience will serve others as they navigate those kinds of ambitions and challenges and mindsets.
Absolutely.
As we wrap up, I'm wondering what's really feeling important for you right now in this season of life? What do you want more of or less of or clarity around?
Yeah. I think, I want the clarity on the clients that I have. My current clients and that set of people are people that have that direct experience with me and what I can do, what I'm capable of. And so they work with me based on their historical context of me. And what I'm looking for is for clients that don't have that, the shared experiences. And that's the challenge for me, is where are they?
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's help them find you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where people could learn more about your coaching work?
Sure. Yeah. I just launched my website and it is jordanbarkercoaching.com. I'm really excited about it. You can also reach me via email, jordanbarkercoaching@gmail.com. I am excited to connect. I look forward to speaking with others that are feeling this sense of I'm reacting to a lot and I want it to stop. I want to make these decisions and take back the control that I know I can have.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it's a beautiful message to wrap with, that you do get to be in control. Maybe you can't control the first thought, but you can definitely control the second. And that can be everything. That can make a huge shift.
Yes.
Jordan, thank you so much for being here and for sharing. Hearing your perspective has sparked a lot of new ideas for me. And I feel really sure there's somebody listening right now and thinking, oh, I'm not the only one who does this. That's fantastic. I'm not alone. So thank you again so much for your time. It's really been great.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Here's your lab kit for today. Three experiments you can try in your own life. Number one, the past has your back experiment. The goal here is to build trust with your own systems. So just pick an area of your life that creates a little friction. Maybe it's morning. Maybe it's getting into work and starting that up. Or maybe it's evening times. And just create a really simple structure around it. Not getting fancy or complicated yet. Keeping it as simple as you possibly can. So that might mean creating a calendar block, making a checklist, or thinking through the sequence of events that needs to happen. You could even name it if you want to. Call it past me's plan or something. And for 3 days, follow that plan exactly, even if you feel resistance, even if you already see there's a better way to do it, even if you think it's not going to work in a million years. Just follow the plan for 3 days. And notice, this is the important part, notice what changes when you stop renegotiating with yourself all day long. Number two, this is the first thought, second thought reset. And the goal here is to interrupt the shame spiral in real time. So the next time something goes wrong, like you forget something and have to go back to the house, or you miss an appointment, or you break a system, just notice your very first thought. Notice it without judgment. Notice it without trying to push it away. Notice what that first thought is. Then pause. Take one deep, slow breath. Inhaling through the nose and exhaling through the mouth, making the exhale longer, inhale. And then choose your second thought intentionally. Ask yourself, okay, what now? I've noticed the first thought. It probably sounded pretty terrible. What can I do next? This works because it creates a space between the impulse and the response, and that is where your agency lives. That's where your power lives. Third is building a bare minimum system to reduce overwhelm and lower the activation energy that Jordan and I talked about. That's the energy it takes to get over the hump of starting something and just get into it. So instead of aiming to build the perfect system, instead of aiming to get it right the very first time, commit yourself to creating a terrible first draft. That's okay. It's going to be edited. So to do this, pick a recurring task, something that has to be done repeatedly. It's a maintenance activity like laundry or packing your briefcase or packing lunch for the day. Take a recurring task and write down the simplest possible checklist for it. Assume it's going to be incomplete. Assume it's going to be messy. That's okay. Use it once, use that checklist one time, and then edit it one time. That's it. Know that you are not trying to build a perfect system. You're building something that you can improve on, and you're building your trust in yourself and your system. That's your lab kit for today. I hope you will try at least one of these experiments and let me know how it goes. And if this episode resonated with you, share it with someone who's tired of feeling like they're constantly playing catch up, because you are not broken. You just haven't been using systems that actually work for your brain yet. Thanks for listening to the ADHD Alchemy Podcast. If you're nodding along and thinking, oh, yeah, that's me, then please subscribe and share this episode with another woman who gets it. Your reviews help more women discover they're not failing, they're just wired differently, and that is a good thing despite the challenges. Plus, I want to hear your story. Apply to be a guest at myadhdalchemy.com and join my free community at fitology.com/community. Those links will be in the show notes. Together, we can rewrite the ADHD shame story into one of strength. I'll see you next time.